A Tricky Kid Media original presentation distributed by iHeartRadio. Welcome to Tricky Kid Radio, where the past and the future meet the present for a fun mix of yesterday, today, and tomorrow, hosted by filmmaker and DJ Roy Turner. Thank you for joining us as we welcome special guests from every corner of pop culture and great music across every genre. Now, here's your host, Roy Turner.
Welcome to a very special edition of Tricky Kid Radio. As a precursor to our Season 6 premiere, we invite you to join us for an ambitious celebration of the release of the Prince Sign of the Times Super Deluxe box set. Joining us will be multi-instrumentalist and all-around Renaissance man Alan Johannes, and so much more. This is the one, man. Any dedicated Prince fan will tell you that this is his magnum opus. Now, while Purple Rain is certainly his most celebrated work commercially, this is where Prince truly became Prince. Severing all ties with the past, his newfound liberation propelled his already peerless ambition to prolific heights that will never be duplicated. There is just so much music here, and there's just so much to talk about. In terms of box sets, the Prince Estate has done a pretty exceptional job in exceeding, if not meeting, I should say, if not exceeding all expectations in securing the right curator to deliver something that we, the fans, have been dreaming about for like over 30 years and kind of assume we'd always would still be dreaming about it. So it's truly not hyperbole when I say that this is a dream come true. First, I should tell you that there is a highly enjoyable and official podcast already in circulation surrounding this release. It's hosted by Minneapolis Treasure and the kind of the go-to Prince scholar, the current Andrea Swenson. Put together with the Prince Estate and Warner Brothers Records, featuring most every living member that was involved with Prince before and after, that somehow had some contribution to the era that Sign of the Times was made. I disclaim this, as this very episode isn't designed to compete. In fact, you should go check that shit out, because it's awesome. And it inspired this very episode. And I encourage you to check out all 8 episodes, because it's awesome. I really loved it. It's miraculously comprehensive for such a mountainous undertaking from this time. I mean, he had, you know, Crystal Ball, Dream Factory, Camille, what all this kind of became, you know, Sign of the Times, you know, the Madhouse Records. He was breaking up with his band and his fiancée, who was the twin sister of the guitar player in the band. You know, just so much going on. You know, the construction of Paisley Park. At this time, I mean, this was the most pivotal time. And what came from this is something just miraculous. So if you're a Prince person, you've been waiting to hear all of these songs. And all this time, I've heard, you know, bootlegs and stuff. But now an official release, it's unthinkable, man. But what we would like to offer here is a people's history. Sure, I'm going to dazzle you with the dates and facts and maybe a few $10 words, but the takeaway is simply to share our personal experiences with a record that has come to define so many of our lives. Not to mention just the excitement that we are finally going to get to dive into this thing. We've all thought so long that it would never actually would arrive. But now it's here, and it's like meeting Santa Claus, like for real. The main inspiration comes from two people that I recently met and started collaborating with. It's a guy that goes by the name of DJ and Edgar Cruz. And Edgar, I hope I'm saying your name right, because it looks like it could be all cool like Edgar Cruz. but anyway, both of them are brilliant writers and among some of the world's most dedicated and knowledgeable Prince scholars. They are known globally for these Prince mega threads on Twitter, where what they do is they pick a Prince album, select really, you know, a great bunch of you know, people that are from the Prince Academia to kind of create these mega threads where you take an album, you assign somebody the one song, and then they're going to kind of fire at you 25 tweets that are going to totally, you know, expand upon while educating and mesmerizing, and it's nerdy as hell. And that's, I mean, I'll be first to disclaim that. And that's right up my alley, man. So they were doing, I can't remember what record it was. I forget what it was, but, and I just kind of just, I happened to see it because I'm a Prince guy, and some of the people involved, like D'Angela Duff, we've had her on this show before. And if you remember, I did her symposium for Graffiti Bridge over the summer, which was so much fun. And I just said, hey, man, when y'all get to Parade Under the Cherry Moon, give me a holler because I'd like to take a swing because that's my favorite record. And so DJ got a hold of me and he said, man, he goes, we're going to do the Sign of the Times thing if you'd like to be interested. So I thought that was so cool. And that's how they do it, is that, you know, it's one per day till the LP is finished. And I just got to do, like I said, Sign of the Times, and they even let me pick my own song. Can you guess which one I chose? Well, find out right after this.
Visit us at the all-new TrickyKid.com for an extra fix of pop culture as we share our adventures at major comic conventions, music festivals, and more from around the world. See the latest pics of your favorite cosplayer while vicariously scoping the landscape at Coachella and beyond. Listen to podcasts, watch exclusive trailers from our latest film projects, and more. Be part of the action by uploading your own source material for our documentary film series to see your own work on the big and silver screens. See what's new at TrickyKid.com today. And now, back with more Tricky Kid Radio.
Do you recognize that sound? Of course you do. That's the instantly recognizable sound of It from the original Sign of the Times album. After completing my thread, and boy was it a challenge, and a lot of it for me was just navigating Twitter. I never realized how much I truly suck at Twitter. But to give the thread of kind of a bit of a vocal addition did not come from any frustrations with Twitter, but to share it with you, our dedicated listeners, especially our visually impaired subscribers that write me these great, wonderful letters of gratitude. And I just wanted you guys to be a part of it. And, you know, just as much as anyone, this is for you. I also invited the other scholars whom on a whim I dubbed the Purple Avengers, because you guys know I'm a big comic book geek and we've had Larry Hama and a bunch of comic book people on here and I'm always talking about comic books. So me being the comic book dork that I am, they love the idea. So you'll be hearing, hopefully, from not only just me in this series, but the rest of them. And you'll be able to actually hear their voices actually reciting their threads. So much so that I'm actually considering creating a separate podcast just for the print stuff. Think about that. We're right now at episode 109 episodes to date and just celebrated 5 years. And my gosh, I think at least 20 of them are all Prince related. Let me know on social media, of course, write to me. You know, obviously you can reach me at trickykid.com. That's tricky-kid.com. My email address is roy@tricky-kid.com. Would that be something you guys would be interested in subscribing to as well? Because I think it'd be cool, man. You know, like I said, we got the regular show and, but you know, we've got all these other great episodes that are just for Prince. Instead of having to hunt 4 years back, they would all be right there. And so, anyway, let me know on social media, or just write to me. And here's Dana on to show you how.
Follow us on social media. Our Twitter handle @TrickyKid2. Type Tricky Kid Radio Podcast on Facebook and DJ Tricky Kid on Instagram. Speaking of which, subscribe now to Roy Turner's alter ego DJ Tricky Kid's amazing Twitch channel at twitch.tv for retro gaming, exclusive DJ sets, as well as DJ instruction and live streaming of Tricky Kid Radio, where you, the audience, can participate and interact with our guests. Don't miss a single stream, so you can be up to date on the latest on all things Tricky Kid. Subscribe now at twitch.tv/DJTrickyKid.
Thanks, Dana. I do want to disclaim that this vocal idea is only designed to extend DJ and Egger's vision, not to subtract from it. These were thoughtfully and brilliantly planned threads to fit that format of Twitter that they both have worked tirelessly on. I just wanted to do something to give back and kind of keep the party going. So this is just a way to just kind of to extend it that, and you know what? Party we shall. So let's jump into my thread right after these messages.
Tricky Kid Radio is distributed by iHeartRadio and is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the Google Play Store. Subscribe for free on the iHeartRadio app or on your favorite podcast platform. Subscribe to Tricky Kid TV on YouTube.com for a stunning visual look at all the fun we have here, plus exclusive content, short films, and more.
All right, all right, all right, as McConaughey would say. I want to tell you that to start right now by going on Twitter and finding the hashtag Prince Twitter thread, or also hashtag SOTT Deluxe, to catch up on all the fascinating threads from this album already posted. And keep in mind, there's plenty more to go, with more being posted every single day. There was actually another one today that was awesome. You should check it out. But here's mine. Sign of the Times, Record 1, Side 2, opening track, It. I always liked how Annie Lennox kicked off the Eurythmics' unforgettable set at Concert for Nelson Mandela in 1988, where she just kind of was like asking, hey, Lennox wasn't asking permission, and neither was Prince, when unbidden into the air screams, I think you gotta give it all the time, all right. It feels so good, it must be a crime, all right. This isn't a question, or even an estimation, but a confession, a celebration of declaration. Armed with a monolithic Fairlight CMI beat and scorched earth urgency, he doubles and triples down on this. Now, we've all felt this way, but have you ever felt more empowered by how appealing that expression is? Basic Tracking began May 11th, 1986 at Sunset Sound, just a few weeks after Warner Brothers released Mountains as the second single from Parade. Now, when Doves Cry returns to the set list at Madison Square Garden that summer, the It beat was wrapped inside of it to kind of give it a bit of a new live kick. Also that summer, It was included in two early sketches of the Dream Factory. Now, I mentioned the other threads, so I won't digress regarding what exactly Dream Factory was, because that's already been expertly handled by my man DJ in this thread. But the conclusion of it is significant. I've long heard Dream Factory was simply a catch-all. Songs, you know, that simply didn't fit anywhere yet, but then a theme emerged. So kind of like, you know, talks of a musical kind of started coming up. And after you hear tracks like Large Room with No Light, it's really not hard to surmise.
Lana drew a picture of school today, one that made her mother cry. A picture of a woman with a drink in her hand, standing by a child with no eyes.
However, It is the first peek into this. It's whimsical, it's fun, and undeniably Prince. It's the only track of the whole thing that doesn't fit anywhere, seemingly, but yet it could fit anywhere on all the projects he had going on. Now, I know that sounds kind of like a bit of a contradiction, but it just kind of was like, what do I do with this? But then you look at it and kind of go, my gosh, it doesn't have the high-pitched thing, so maybe not Camille, but this could have, it was the one track that was going to make it. It was not going to be put on the cutting room floor. That's kind of the point, you know what I mean? So that's why it to me is the track, because it's the only one out of all of them. He could have made, you know, like a themed record that has just songs like Slow Love or maybe Adore, things like that. But it is just, it's so incredible how it's somehow universal and solitary simultaneously. I'm gonna do it. Now, by now, you've probably have heard Rob Sheffield's fun but factless theory that Sign of the Times is an amalgamation of Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde. Now, come on now, there are some undeniable similarities that kind of gives it legs and kind of makes it fun. It kind of reminds me of the Dark Side of Oz thing with the Pink Floyd, where you know, Dark Side of the Moon, where you line it up with Wizard of Oz. And, you know, and that's fun and cool and all that, but ultimately it's, you know, well, I tell you what, you know, if taken seriously, all you need is it is the ultimate debunker to Sheffield's tourism. So I'm going to let Prince kind of complete the summation from Housequake.
Bullshit! Shut up already! Damn! Housequake! Everybody jump up and down!
Housequake! But you might be saying the same to me after I take you down a path that at first glance could seem even more far-fetched. Sign of the Times, specifically its influence on the rise of the alternative movement in the 90s, and new wave that preceded it, and in turn its influence on him. Because he was prepared to take it all on. His ambitions are so far-reaching that every song on the set is a brave new world. And for my money, none so much more than it. It's this microcosm, a deeper world born from an unfathomable macrocosm of liberation and power. It's a little known fact that after seeing the 1993 video for 11's Reach Out, directed by Prince photographer Randy St. Nicholas, Prince contacted her about meeting with Alan and Natasha about them being a part of an extended New Power Generation. Here's Alan.
And then she directed it and filmed it at her house. It's in black and white with red elements. And it's a cool, we kind of lumped in with the grungy period. We were touring with Pearl Jam and Soundgarden, but we were definitely more in that kind of, like, if grunge had more Zeppelin and Beatles in it,
right,
than Stevie Wonder, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the song was called Reach Out, and we were on the TV, and also Beavis and Butthead featured us a couple of times, which back then was a good thing.
Yeah, right.
And he ended up seeing that and telling Randy that I can text her and she'll remember exactly what he said for more accuracy. But yeah, she's really close with Randy St. Nicholas throughout the years, and Prince was telling her that he was really a big fan of my band 11 and was interested in meeting Natasha and I at some point back in the early 90s.
Wow.
You know, maybe to bring us into the fold, as it were. But we also knew that meant being absorbed 100%, you know.
In 1980, Prince came to see Alan and Natasha perform after Stevie Wonder's endorsement. Natasha was close with Stevie and was actually signed to Motown in the mid-1970s. Alan remembers the nod of respect he received from Prince.
Stevie invited her to see that, to hear the record in person at the nursery out in Malibu.
Oh my God!
Back in the 70s, yeah. Oh. She was signed to Motown before we met, and we started at 11. She was just a teen, but Stevie was a huge fan at first, and so
that's incredible.
She's sitting next to Stevie, and they're listening to probably at that point. I can only imagine it's either Race Babbling or Black Orchid. Other records, insane.
Oh yeah.
What a time! It's like that's one thing that I got to meet him a long time ago. He came to he happened to be at a show that I was doing. Because he played flippers, and was, in my band played flippers back in the early '80s. I think what year was that? Oh, he was at the, I forget if it was Lost a Club or whatever. But I remember this is around the time of Dirty Mind, even before Purple Rain appeared.
Right.
Know? And he's always been such a big inspiration and such an omnipresence throughout those years. Even though we were, more in the rock world as it were, but obviously there was so many aspects with my band that grew up on Beatles, Stevie Wonder, Led Zeppelin combination as it were, that I could totally always resonate with what he was doing, and also his multi-instrumental genius, his ability to kind of fuse so many things and to be in the moment. And by men, I mean he was in the room, and I acknowledged him, he acknowledged me, and I remember, seeing him before, and he gave me like a nod, like a very kind of, it's like this nod that says a lot more than just a minute, a lot of talking,
Sure.
And so I felt really great about being acknowledged in that way. So obviously he thought I was good or cool or whatever that it was. I was doing like a solo improv guitar thingy at this place called Lhasa Club. Back then was on but there was never another time that we met. We're supposed to meet in the '90s with Randy, saying that he wanted to meet, but somehow it didn't work out.
In 2003, after finishing Queen to the Stone Age side project, The Desert Sessions, at my main man, Dave Ketching's place, Rancho de la Luna, the label asked for a single that required a B-side. Without skipping a beat, Alan immediately took the project to his place in Los Angeles.
That's the reason that I chose it when it was time to do a B-side. Josh said, for Desert Sessions, said, let's do a cover. And I immediately said, I'd love to do a version of it because it's been one of my favorite tunes. And I can call it in my mind's eye or my mind's ear, as it were, and it gives me that feeling each time. And so in the version that I tried to honor all the important things about that song in terms of the components and try to explore what makes it work, It was no brainer for me to try to do it, for that. And we did it in one afternoon at my studio at the house. But anyway, yeah. So basically, we need a song. We need a B-side for the Desert Sessions. I don't know if you're aware of what the deal is. There's a bunch of us getting together and having 2-3 days to. We had already gotten back from the Joshua Tree, and we had the whole album done, but we needed to have more material. So we did, B-sides over at my studio in Los Angeles. And so I chose to do it. And so I had Josh, Homie from Queen, and Troy came over. Without even thinking, I just kind of like tried to imagine what a Desert Session song would sound like that was actually a Prince song.
Yeah.
Like, if there's an atmosphere in Desert Session, if you listen to it long enough, if suddenly it appeared on it and you didn't know, if there had been no Prince or whatever, it wouldn't be suddenly like, where did this come from? Not to say that the Desert Session is like Prince, but it's something about that song in particular that was very much right for a Desert Sessions release.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more Tricky Kid Radio.
What's up? This is the infamous serial wax killer, Beastie Boys DJ Assassin, Mix Master Mike, and you're tuned into my man DJ Tricky Kid. Don't be a clown. Don't sleep. Check it out, y'all.
See what's new at tricky-kid.com today. Once again, your host, Roy Turner.
All right, so now we're in the second half of the thread. Okay, so listen to this. When I first started working with Claude Coleman Jr., he's a drummer for Ween, and he has a great solo project called A Mandolin. And I managed him in that project for a couple of years. So I got to, you know, meet and be around the other Ween guys for, you know, during that time. And I'll tell you, the thing that we bonded over immediately was this mutual love of Prince, especially the Sign of the Times, Camille, kind of, you know, and it. They even did this kind of interpolation of Shockadelica from their first record. It's called LMLYP, but I'm not going to spell that out for you. You'll have to look that up. Here's a bit of it here. Let's go out, the smell of doom. Our blood is creeping into your lonely room. The bed's on fire. Your fate is sealed. And you're so tired. Now, Mickey, who goes by Dean Ween, he was also on that Desert Sessions project. And I kind of always kind of assumed that it, you know, them covering it was his influence. But in fact, it was Alan.
You know, kind of had an arrangement in my mind, which is kind of pretty faithful to the original. And we wanted to some of the components. The only thing is I'm doing Evo guitars for the da 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 da
right.
You know, and then Josh played my pad drums, which are the electronic kit. You know, tried to get a little bit of a, you know, the, I think we used the Lin drum on that one. It had the cool sound that it used to get. It was maybe a Studio 440, but it kind of the sound of like that, almost like a milder version of the Cameo snare.
Right. He used he used a Fairlight CMI on that.
Right, the Fairlight. Oh my God, so well, that's way above my budget. That's what I have right now. Yeah, 150 grand, anybody? Yeah, sure. I'm just a kid out of high school.
Right.
So we laid down, Troy Bate played the Moog, and, you know, we went to the song, and I wanted to make sure they understood. What I love about that song, it has got the tension and release, where the one of the main themes keeps going, and then the harmony changes because of the bass notes moving, the tension changes, you know. The light just repeats, but each time it comes around again, it feels slightly different because the bass line moves, you know.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite guitar solos I've ever played. Obviously, there's no real guitar solo, and in he didn't play, you know, on that particular one, he didn't play a guitar solo. I just thought, well, you know, which is good because now I feel okay about playing guitar solo because I'm certainly not gonna try to put a guitar solo where Prince would have put a guitar solo and have it sit there for people to hear compared to his guitar solo. Even though I'm quite a prodigious guitar player, but he also had this insane way of doing it just right. So I stuck it as a guitar solo on there. I sung it in a kind of, imagine it more like a Bowie-esque kind of approach. You know?
Sure. And I felt that when I first heard it.
Yeah, I was just like, because I can't, you know, he had almost coming undone emotionally the way he's singing it, you know? It's like his voice has an emotional crack. It's like, it's a particular tone and performance that he has in his voice, you know? It's kind of pleading, and it's a little bit angry, but at the same time, it's really sexy.
Yeah.
Like, it has a bit of the James Brown thing going. So, I mean, it's the perfect song, you know? And then, you know, I did that with, like, an octave fuzz guitars to try to, because that's obviously some kind of crazy strings.
Yeah.
That Troy and Josh sang some of the harmonies that are a little bit, you know, they're a little bit less, they're a little disorganized compared to the original, but we just want to kind of give it a little bit of that flavor, you know?
Sure.
The one sound I couldn't nail, well, I tried to do like the version, like, you know, on Radiohead's Creep, where the guitars go, so I just did that with palmed heavy guitars, but obviously in the original, that happens on every round resets. That is a pretty huge sound. So I was just like, okay, as long as they kind of, you know, put a little signpost here so people know what's up, go listen to the original.
But I want to be clear, it goes even deeper. You know how Nirvana's Dave Grohl, he covered Darlin' Nikki from Purple Rain with the Foo Fighters. Dave Grohl was also a great, friend of that whole desert scene with Josh Homme and Desert Sessions. And, he was even on one of the Queen of the Stone Age records. And then, of course, Prince claps back with the Foo Fighters' Best of You at the Super Bowl that year, which I know I'm biased, but I defy anybody to give a better example of somebody's. That's his Queen at Live Aid. Prince at the Super Bowl, where he somehow cued the heavens to make it rain during Purple Rain. And let me tell you, I was 10 feet from him at Coachella in 2008 when he effortlessly wah-wahed into Radiohead's Creep, another staple from, the early to mid-90s kind of weird alternative thing. I mean, they don't really fit into the grunge thing, but we're not, specifically stating that. That just happened to be the most popular thing at the time, That was one of the greatest nights of my entire life. I'm a massive Portishead fan. And they were the original headliners. So I was already going. By that time, I was already, hooked up and connected. And I'd been at Coachella with, there's an artist named Peaches that you guys might be familiar with. And I had been at Coachella with her and her band. I managed her side band, or I'm sorry, her live band, Sweet Machine, for a while. So I was already in, and so I was already was going, and I had the hookup and all that. And, to see Portishead and a bunch of great bands. And then just a few weeks before the show, they announced that he was now going to be the headliner. So Portishead went on right before him. This is stuff of dreams, And he started it out very nostalgic. He even had Morris Day and the Time there and did The Bird and, and Jungle Love. So it started out as a very kind of, trip back in time. And then when he did he didn't announce it. He just started doing it. But it is, I'm pretty good with words, okay? But it is challenging to fully articulate what it was like feeling 80,000 people collectively getting it all at once. Like, oh my God. Now, I'm by no means like a massive Radiohead fan, but like when it was that moment where this is never going to happen again. He's not going to be covering this on tour. And just the fact that his awareness of it all and was doing something so special. You were part of a moment that was happening. And again, he didn't... the normal thing where you would watch from the side of the stage was a bit different during his set. But thankfully, I got to go into this little area right there. And he was right there, man. And one of, I never actually met Prince. That's as close as I've ever been to him. So that was pretty cool. I'll digress for just a second. He did a Good Morning America thing when I was living in New York. And I went to that in a free show in Bryant Park when he was promoting 3121. And did a club show that night at a place called Butter. And I was probably closer to him then. But in terms of memory, man, nothing really beats that Coachella set. But you can see where it fits into this theme we're talking about here. And other fun things like timing. Like, why did he happen to return to it, pun intended, by the way, on the Diamonds and Pearls tour, wrapped inside Thieves in the Temple in 1992 at the height of the grunge movement? Another example where I mentioned about how New Wave having an effect on him and stuff is I feel like it's undeniable. And I had another example of this is a recent chat I had with Talking Heads' Chris Frantz. And if you have not heard the episode I did with Chris Frantz promoting his new book, Remain in Love, please go check it out now. It's amazing. It's celebrating 40 years of the album Remain in Light, their big breakthrough with Once in a Lifetime and all that. Great, great chat. Chris is a great guy. But we were talking and I realized, that I feel like that Prince mimicked their strategy. They had a concert film called Stop Making Sense that David Byrne famously pulled them off the road and said, we're going to let the film tour for us. And I really feel like that was his motivation for making the Sign of the Times film to do the same for him. And if you know the Stop Making Sense film and you know the Sign of the Times film, you know that another big similarity is that David Byrne walks out first and does Psycho Killer solo. Then the band joins one at a time. The exact same thing happens in the Sign of the Times film. So that's pretty hard to ignore or deny there. And the reason being is I think he was eager to enter the recently completed Paisley Park as to why that tour never made it to America. Check out these dates. The Sign of the Times tour ends June 29th. Paisley Park opens September the 11th, the same day Prince performs Sign of the Times and Playing the Sunshine at the MTV Music Awards. All denimed out in 1987, debuting his new look and his new sound and his new band. The Sign of the Times film opens October 29th, just 6 weeks later. But for me, the ultimate appeal of it and Sign of the Times as a whole is that it's the only album I feel that I've ever heard that surmises the entire human experience. But yet, it's so simple. But nothing quite defines how it makes me feel every time I hear it. When his voice breaks, I break right along with him. There's just this urgency, this confessional, and this kind of fuck it, like I've got to tell you thing. And he's not worrying about staying in key. He's just got to get this off his chest with this almost hesitant edge. And when that voice breaks, I break right along with him. And lastly, I find comfort that it was with him till the very end. His very last tour in 2016 was called Piano and a Microphone. And there's no piano anywhere to be found on the original track to it. But yet, he pulled it out at the Oakland stop in 2016. And for me, with delight and comfort and wonder and appreciation, I think about that all the time. All right. Want to thank my man, Alan Johannes, for being so generous on such short notice. We have a great mutual friend in Dave Ketching, who is a national treasure and one of my favorite people in this entire world. And because of Dave's endorsement, he was so happy to give his time, and he called me and I hipped him to what we were up to this week with the threads and all that, and he was just so happy to be a part of it, and was just so just such a joy to talk with. He's a great dude, man. On stage, off stage, you won't find anybody that doesn't love that dude, and he's awesome. Check out all of his stuff. If a lot of these names are new to you, if a lot of some of these names like Ween or the band 11 that Alan is in, or even King's X, if these are new to you, I hope that this is going to encourage you to check these amazing artists out. I mean, if you were to watch like Nirvana's like Smells Like Teen Spirit video, I mean, the aesthetic of Prince was really nowhere to be found. You know, what does all this have to do with it and its inclusion on Sound of the Times? More than you think. I mention it not only to share these rarely heard details, but as a point of reference. You know, I'm not going to claim that it is like the forebearer of grunge. That dubious honor goes to my brothers in King's X, who are one of the most original bands you'll ever hear in your entire life, for which we are actually collaborating and creating a movie right now called Born to be Loved, The Story of King's X. that is in full collaboration with them to finally tell their great story. But once again, I want to thank, you know, man, my goodness, Alan Johannes, Edgar, and DJ please check out all the other Twitter threads and look for this here. Let me know if you guys want to me to start another podcast. It's just for Prince to put all this kind of stuff there. And check it out. It's under Prince Twitter threads on Twitter, or just hashtag SOTT Deluxe. And stick around. I encourage all the other people to do some recording of their own so you actually can hear it from them, their own voices, and just kind of keep the party going. So again, I thank you so much for checking this out.
Next week on Tricky Kid Radio. This has been a presentation of Tricky Kid Media Originals, distributed by iHeartRadio, created and directed by Roy Turner, edited and mastered by Marcus Miller. Theme music by The Buckpets, original score by Jocelyn Hunt, artwork by Antora Sandy, marketing and PR by Francesca Miles. Tricky Kid Radio is hosted by Roy Turner with introductions by me, Dana French. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week.
Check out that cover, man, of Prince's It from, you know, from with Alan and Troy and Josh from Queens, man. Just great, great, amazing stuff.
I wanna do it, baby, all the time.